I'd like to turn to the book of Malachi, chapter 3, looking at the very last part of the second paragraph of the church covenant, which says to contribute cheerfully and regularly to the support of the ministry, the expenses of the church, the relief of the poor, and the spread of the gospel through all nations. That deals with the tithes and offerings and pretty much states what the tithes and offerings are used for. And we've already seen it's used for the support of the ministry, and each one has a responsibility and obligation to contribute to such. And then we see the next thing that's mentioned is the expenses of the church. And again, the Lord's way of financing his churches is through tithes and offerings. It's his only way. And we see God uses the tithes and offerings of his people. And here in Malachi 3 and verse 10, it says, bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse. And notice that there may be meat in my house. That there may be meat in my house. So one of the things that tithes and offerings are used for, of course, is the legitimate expenses, one of the Lord's churches, and they are numerous. Many seem to think that it doesn't cost anything to heat a building or to just everyday monthly expenses, but there are expenses. They're numerous. There are expenses that are varied, and these expenses, just like in a household, are continuous, and God uses the tithes and offerings. And it is the duty, and it is the responsibility, and it is the pledge, and it is the privilege of each member to bring their tithes and offerings into the storehouse or into the place where God has place them. So that when we give our tithes and offerings, we're helping contribute to the ministry. We're also helping contribute to the expenses of the church. And then the next thing that's mentioned in the covenant is the relief of the poor. And we want to spend a little time upon that. The Bible teaches very plainly, in fact, we have clear statements, which we'll look at here in a minute, that there will always be the poor. Lyndon Johnson, I believe it was, that it was his agenda to wipe out poverty. Well, that's not going to happen, because the Lord has stated that we will always have the poor with us. But notice in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 15, the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 15, and I'm going to read the 11th verse, and then we want to turn to Matthew 26. But in Deuteronomy 15 and verse 11, for the poor shall never cease out of the land. Doesn't matter how many programs you come up with, the poor will never cease out of the land. Now, he's talking there, of course, of the land of Canaan, but the application is to all lands. Therefore I command thee, saying, thou shalt open thine hand wide unto thy brother, to thy poor, and to thy needy in thy land. So the poor will never cease out of the land. And then he goes on and he states a responsibility to our land, to our brother or family. And then notice in Matthew chapter 26, Matthew 26, we see Christ makes reference to this in Matthew 26 and verse 11. He said, for ye have the poor always with you, but me ye have not always. For ye have the poor always among you. So nothing is going to wipe out poverty. Any politician that talks about wiping out poverty is speaking out of ignorance, because it's not going to happen. And anyone who knows the scriptures knows that that is true. So the Bible teaches that there will always be the poor, but the Bible also teaches that provision is to be made for them. But very, very unlike our welfare system. James wrote in James 1 and verse 27, he said, "Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction." Now, he's not just talking about poverty there, he's talking about need. And the Bible puts the two together, the poor, the needy, poverty and need. But there is a great fallacy in any religion. Doesn't matter what so-called religion it is, there is a great fallacy in any religion that is devoid of compassion. There has to be compassion. The Bible teaches us to have compassion. The fact that Christ dwells in our heart should automatically give us some compassion. So the Bible teaches in Isaiah 58 in particular that there's a great fallacy in a religion that is void of this compassion. Notice if we turn over to Isaiah 58, we'll read verse 2, verse 6, and verse 7. Isaiah 58, verse 2, he says, "Yet they seek me daily," talking about religion, "and delight to know my ways as a nation that did righteousness, and forsook not the ordinances of their God. They ask of me the ordinances of justice. They take delight in approaching to God." So they were very religious. They were still going through all the outward forms of their religion. Verse 6, "Is not this the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, and to let the oppressed go free, and that ye break every yoke. Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, and that thou bring the poor that are cast out to thy house? When thou seest the naked, that thou cover him, and thou hide not thyself from thine own flesh," or thine own family. So it teaches us that we're to have some compassion toward the poor. Now, in the Old Testament, provision was made for the poor and the needy. But again, it was very unlike our current welfare system, which is totally wrong. But we're not going to go there, Lord willing. But in the book of Leviticus, chapter 19, we'll see that God made provision for the poor and the needy, the strangers in the land. In Leviticus 19, verse 9 and 10, it says, "And when ye reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly or entirely reap the corners of thy field, neither shalt thou gather the gleanings of thy harvest." It says, I want you to leave the corners of the field, leave some of it there. Don't glean that. And then in verse 10 it says, "And thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, neither shalt thou gather every grape of thy vineyard. Thou shalt leave them for the poor and stranger. I am the Lord your God." Now, that's quite unlike today. Now, today we would mail the gleanings to them, mail the grapes to them. But we see here there was no encouragement to sloth. They had to go out, and they had to, if they wanted grapes in that vineyard, they had to go get them. If they wanted the stalks, they're going to have to go, and they're going to have to glean. But provision was made for the poor. But the poor had to put forth some effort to receive these things. Again, very unlike today. And then notice in Leviticus chapter 23, and verse 22, "And when you reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not make clean riddance of the corners of thy field when thou reapest, Neither shalt thou gather any gleaning of thy harvest, that thou shalt leave them unto the poor and to the stranger. I am the Lord your God. So again, provision was made. But in no way did it encourage sloth. And then notice in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 15. Book of Deuteronomy, chapter 15, verses 7 and verse 8. If there be among you a poor man of one of thy brethren within any of thy gates in thy land, which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not harden thine heart, nor shut thine hand from thy poor brother. Again, compassion. But thou shalt open thine hand wide unto him, and shalt surely lend him sufficient. Notice the word lend. Lend him sufficient for his need, and that which he wanteth or lacketh. And then over in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 24. Deuteronomy chapter 24 and verse 19. When thou cuttest down thine harvest in thy field, and hast forgot a sheaf in the field, thou shalt not go again to fetch it. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thine hand. So they were to leave something there. They didn't have to bring it to the poor. They didn't have to go out of their way to do any of that. All they had to do was leave some of it in the field. And then it was the responsibility of the needy. It was the responsibility of the poor to get to the field and do the necessary work to get their food. And it says that the Lord would bless this individual. The Lord would bless the individual that didn't clear the corners of his field, that left something there. The Lord would bless that individual. He would bless him for his compassion. And then notice in Hebrews chapter 13, Hebrews 13, there's a reminder here that we, in all of our praising and worshiping the Lord, that we do not forget something very important. In Hebrews 13, verse 15 and verse 16. By him, therefore, that is by Christ, let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually. That is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. But to do good and to communicate, that is to share, forget not. To do good, this would be in the context of and to communicate and to share. So it's talking about doing good unto others. He says, don't forget this. That is, in all your worship and all your offering of sacrifices of praise, don't forget to do good unto others. Don't forget to share with others. And then it says, for with such sacrifices, God is well pleased. God is pleased with that. God is pleased with worship. God is also pleased when we have compassion upon others and when we share with others. And again, this sharing with others out of a heart of compassion is evidence of the love of God. Notice in 1 John chapter 3, 1 John chapter 3, verse 17, herein is our love made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, First John 3, verse 17, but whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother hath need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion, the issue here is compassion, from him how dwelleth the love of God in him. That is, if you don't have compassion for the poor and needy, how does the love of God dwell in you? And we see that showing compassion to the needy brings the blessings of the Lord. In Psalm 41 and verse 1, blessed is he that considereth the poor. The Lord will deliver him in time of trouble. That is, the Lord will bless that individual that has a heart of compassion to consider the poor. And then notice in the book of Luke chapter 6, book of Luke chapter 6 and verse 38, give and it shall be given unto you, good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over, shall men give unto your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet, withal it shall be measured to you again. So the Bible does teach that provision is to be made for the poor and the needy. And Solomon, in his wisdom, had much to say upon the subject of rightly treating the poor and the needy. It warns against mistreating the poor and needy. Now today, a lot of folks that are poor and needy, they think they've been mistreated if you don't give them something. But that's not the case. That's not mistreating them. Again, we're to have compassion. We're not to cheat them. We're not to take advantage of them in any way. We're not to abuse them. And Solomon speaks upon all of this, and he also has much to say about sharing with others and how God will bless the individual that does that. But notice in Proverbs chapter 11, and we'll read verses 24 through 26, and we'll look at several verses here in Proverbs. But in Proverbs 11, verse 24, there is that scattereth, and yet increaseth. And there is that withholdeth more than is meet or fitting, but it tendeth to poverty. The liberal soul, and that's not talking about politics, it's talking about sharing. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be on the head of him that selleth it, or makes it available to those who are in need. And then in Proverbs 14, verse 31, he that oppresseth the poor reproacheth his maker. And there's more than one way of oppressing the poor. Most people think that, again, you're oppressing the poor if you don't give them what they want. Then you are oppressing the poor. But the truth is, you can oppress the poor by giving to them. That's true also. We're not to oppress the poor. And our government oppresses the poor by their giveaways. They really do. They make them slaves to a system. So that is a form of oppression. But again, I'm trying to stay away from all that. He that oppresseth the poor reproacheth his maker. But he that honoreth him hath mercy. That is, he that honoreth the Lord hath mercy. That's, again, showing some compassion. Hath mercy on the poor. That is, the poor and the needy. And then notice in Proverbs 19, verse 17. He that hath pity upon the poor, now this is going to the degree of giving to the poor, and this is obvious as we read on. He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord. Now, I can't think of anybody better to lend to than the Lord. But he says, he that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he, that is the Lord, pay him again. Now, there's several parameters to that, of course. You have to give in the right spirit. You have to give for the right reasons. It has to be for the honor and glory of God and all of that. It's not just a blanket statement that if you give to the poor and you do so for to be noticed, that the Lord's going to bless. That the Bible teaches us the opposite, of course. And then notice in Proverbs 22 and verse 9, he that hath a bountiful eye shall be blessed, For he giveth of his bread to the poor. And then in verse 16, he that oppresseth the poor to increase his riches. Okay, here's an individual who's looking out simply for himself. And he that giveth to the rich shall surely come to want or to lack. In verse 22, rob not the poor because he is poor, neither oppress the afflicted in the gate. For the Lord will plead their cause and spoil the soul of those that spoiled them. So that's a warning. And then notice in Proverbs 28 and verse 27, he that giveth unto the poor shall not lack. Again, but that's not just a blanket statement. That has to be taken in context of everything that the Scriptures teach. Again, it has to be, have to give for the right reasons. But he that hideth his eyes shall have many a curse. That is, the one who hides their eyes is the one who pretends the poor don't exist, pretends the needy doesn't exist. They see someone in need and they just choose to look the other way and pretend it doesn't exist. That's what he's talking about here. And that is human nature, to hide our eyes from the poor and the needy. And then notice in Proverbs 29 and verse 7, the righteous considereth the cause of the poor, but the wicked regardeth not to know it. So again, it's a matter of compassion. So the Bible has a lot to say about the poor. The Bible has a lot to say about giving to the poor. And the Bible gives us many examples of those who were compassionate to the poor and the needy. I think of Peter and John there in the book of Acts, chapter 3. Remember, they're going into the temple, and there was a man who sat outside the gate of the temple daily begging. Why he was poor, we don't know. But Peter and John, as they are going to the temple that day, this man's there asking for alms, as he always did. And in Acts chapter 3 and verse 6, Peter said, "Silver and gold have I none." In other words, he's saying, "I don't have any money to give you. But in the name of Christ, stand up and walk." Now, if a poor person comes to, and they want money, and you don't feel led to give them money, and or you don't have money to give them, or you don't think that you should, and again, that's a big subject, but you can show compassion to them by telling them about the Lord. And that's what Peter and John did in Acts chapter 3. "Silver and gold have I none, but I do have something I want to give you." And then tell them about the Lord. Chances are that individual in today's society won't bother you again. They're probably not going to come around to you again. Now, that's not why you do that. But you do that because you have compassion for them. And you have a concern for them. So just giving silver and gold doesn't fix everything. What people need more than anything is Jesus Christ. So when someone comes and they have a tale of woe, whether it be a legitimate tale of woe or a made-up tale of woe, who knows? But they need to hear about the Lord. And we ought to pray for them. Lord, help them. But if it's drugs, alcohol that's led to the poverty, or maybe they've had some just terrible circumstances, we need to have at least enough compassion to pray for those individuals. Then there's the example of Dorcas there in Acts chapter 9 and verse 36. And there's the example of the church of Antioch. Notice in the book of Acts chapter 11. And this, too, is another way of another segment of the poor. In Acts chapter 11 You know, a lot of people today, they think, well, if you don't open up a soup kitchen, then you're not helping the poor. Well, let me tell you something. You can open up a soup kitchen and not help the poor. You can have all the giveaways you want to give and still not help them. Now, if you're really interested in helping, that's not necessarily mean that you open up a soup kitchen and all of that. But in the book of Acts chapter 11, verse 29 and 30, then the disciples, every man according to his ability, determined, and that's how God wants us to give, according to our ability, that's what tithe is based on, determined to send relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea. Now that's a way of helping the poor. If a church sees another church that is struggling, this is one way to help the poor. And this is what the church did here in Acts chapter 11. Which also they did and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. So they sent some financial relief to the churches of Judea. Now we see also in Romans chapter 15, Romans chapter 15 and verse 26. For it hath pleased them of Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor saints which are at Jerusalem. Here again we see the churches of Macedonia, the churches of Achaia, decided they were going to send some relief, financial relief, to the poor saints, to the brethren, at Jerusalem. So when a church helps another church, or a church helps a saint of God, you don't have to help the... So many times people just, when they think of the poor, they think of the homeless. And certainly they're poor. But the poor covers a much larger area than that. There, when you help other churches, that's helping the poor. When you help saints of God, that's helping the poor. So it doesn't have to just go to homeless people. And the Bible also lays down some guidelines for giving to the poor and needy. Again, the whole purpose, and this is what people seem to forget, and certainly it's what our society has forgotten. The whole purpose of giving to the poor and the needy is to help them. It's to get them on their feet so that they can get going again. It's not to give them a free ride. That's not helping them. That is just another form of oppression. And again, Solomon warns against that. So the Lord lays down some guidelines on how we are to give to the poor and to the needy. And again, the whole purpose is there has to be compassion. And the compassion says, I want to help this person. Now, if you give $10 to a drunk and he goes out and buys $10 worth of booze, you have not helped him. You have not helped him one iota. You may relieve your conscience and think, I gave to the poor. No, you gave to a drunk and you helped him support his habit. So the Bible, there has to be some responsibility. You can't just be irresponsible in giving to anybody that comes along. And there are plenty. We get calls all the time. I mean, you can't be in this building for more than a half hour without, it's almost like they're looking for a car to be parked in the parking lot. And here they come. And you hear all kinds of stories. Some of them may be very legitimate. Some of them, no doubt, are made up. But the Word of God lays down some guidelines in giving to the poor. And again, our tithes and offerings, this is part of it, is to contribute to the needs of others. And again, that can be a lot of different people. It can be other churches. It can be saints of God within the church. But it can be those outside the church. There's so many areas. But the support of the poor and needy especially toward the children of God. Notice in the book of Romans chapter 12 and verse 13. Romans 12, verse 13. Distributing to the necessity of saints. Distributing to the necessity of saints. Now that's not just limited to finances. It simply means helping to meet the necessity, the needs of the saints. And then notice in Galatians chapter 6, Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all. That is, we ought to want to do good. We ought not to want to do bad to anyone. To do good unto all. Especially unto them who are of the household of faith. Especially them. That's our first responsibility. Especially those who are of the household of faith. And even then, the Lord lays down some guidelines. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, if we turn over there, we see the instruction that Paul gives to Timothy, which Timothy is to relate to the church of which he is pastoring at that time, concerning the aid of widows. And he lays down some guidelines for this. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 3, he says, honor widows, but then he qualifies it, that are widows indeed. That is, that are truly widows. He says, honor them. And then verse 4, he says, but if any widow, and notice, if any widow have children or nephews, that's family, let them, that is these children and nephews, learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. That is good and acceptable before God. First and foremost, it is a family's responsibility to help. That's first. Verse 5. Now she that is a widow indeed and desolate. Okay, so it's not just a widow here. It's a desolate widow. Trusteth in God and continueth in supplications and prayers night and day. So here is a widow. She is desolate. But being desolate is not enough. Now, this is, again, guidelines for the church. She also must trust the Lord and must be a praying person. Verse 6, but she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth. Because you don't give to somebody for them to just waste it. And then notice in verse 9, let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man. Okay, she has to be at least 60 years old here, and there's a reason for this. Well reported of for good works. Well, here's a woman who has good testimony. She has a good testimony. She's godly. If she have brought up children, if she have lodged strangers, if she have washed the saints' feet, if she have relieved the afflicted, if she have diligently followed every good work. He's saying, you help this woman. The one who meets these qualifications. Here is a woman, her husband has died, she is now desolate, she's a godly woman, she's faithful to the Lord. You help her. You help her. The Bible teaches that. Now, her family is to help her first. But then notice, you know, there's sometimes it'll happen this way. You have a widow. Her family is, for lack of a better word, a bunch of bums. And they don't take care of her at all. They don't care for her at all. And some saint of God says, well, it's not our responsibility, it's the family's responsibility. That's true. It is the family's responsibility. But if the family's not meeting their responsibility, somewhere you've got to have some compassion. You don't just say, well, it's not my problem. That's where the compassion comes in. So this woman is desolate. She's godly. And perhaps her family doesn't help her. And Paul says, this woman, you can help. Then verse 11, remember the 60-year-old thing, but the younger widows refuse. Doesn't mean refuse them into the church. He's talking about financial support. For when they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry. In other words, what he's saying here is this younger woman, she can work. She has ways of supporting herself. So, and he uses the word refuse here. Now, a lot of people, again, immediately, you refuse to give money to somebody, you're uncaring, you're unkind, and on and on and on it goes. But again, there are some guidelines. Now, the Bible also mentions that there are some contributing causes to poverty, such as sloth. Proverbs 6, verses 10 and 11 tells us that if a person is lazy, they refuse to work, guess what? You're going to be poor. You're not going to have anything. So sloth contributes to poverty. The love of pleasure, Proverbs 21 and verse 17, tendeth to poverty. That is, an individual goes out and buys all the toys and then doesn't have enough money to pay his mortgage. Well, he's made foolish choices. And he's a lover of pleasure, and that can lead to poverty. Drunkenness, Proverbs 23, verse 21, certainly leads to poverty and all the things that are related to drunkenness, drug addiction, and on it goes. But to be clear, we're not saying that everyone who is poor is lazy. That's not what we're saying. We're not saying that everyone who is poor is a waster and a lover of pleasure. That's not what we're saying. We're not saying that everyone that's poor is a drunkard. What we are saying, these are many times contributing causes to poverty. The whole idea is to help. If you are giving money to someone who refuses to work, you are not helping them. If you are giving money to someone who is just wasteful, you are not helping them. If you are giving money to someone who is a drunk, you are not helping them. There's ways you can help them, but giving money to them is not going to help them. Might make you feel good, but you haven't helped them. You haven't helped them one bit. Now notice in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. Begin reading with verse 7. For yourselves know how ye ought to follow us, for we behaved not ourselves disorderly among you, neither did we eat any man's bread for naught or for nothing, but wrought with labor and travail night and day, that we might not be chargeable to any of you. Not because we have not power or authority, but to make ourselves an example unto you to follow us. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. That's very plain. And all that our society would learn that lesson. But again, I'm trying not to go there. For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. Now them that are such, we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work and eat their own bread, which isn't going to be much. But again, there are guidelines that are given to direct us in sharing materially. I think myself, again, you may not agree, but I believe it's a very bad practice to give a stranger money. You have no idea what they're going to use it for. They may use it for the right thing, but they may not. There's other ways to help them. You can take them down to the grocery store and buy them food. 9 times out of 10, they're going to get mad at you if you even suggest that. Had it happen many, many, many times. So you come in, you sit in the service, and after service, I'll take you down to the grocery store. I've been cussed out like you wouldn't believe, because what they want is money. And I think it's a foolish practice. I think it's an irresponsible way of sharing with the poor, just to give them something, and perhaps you are just encouraging a bad habit, a destructive habit. But we are to have compassion. We are to have compassion upon them. And even those that curse us, we ought to pray for them, and you ought to tell them about the Lord, because that's what they need. And then, of course, there's always going to be situations in a church in which someone is needy. And I believe a church has a responsibility to help those within the body that are needy, again, by following the Lord's guidelines. If they're irresponsible, you know, all those things have to be considered. Now, there are churches that don't have much financially, but they can still help their own. They can have a food shower. Each person can just bring some food and help somebody out that way. There's all kinds of ways of helping those that are in need, but a church is to help their own. And if the Lord leads, they are to help those outside of the church, but it has to be done in a responsible sort of way, not an irresponsible way. So we do have an obligation, and we need to examine our hearts, because if we find ourselves having absolutely no compassion for the poor, then something's wrong with us. And I understand that we can get tired of people taking advantage of people's generosity. But at the same time, we ought to have at least enough compassion for them that, Lord, would you just save their soul and help them. Don't ever get to a point where you get so upset with an individual that you can't share with them Christ and you can't pray that the Lord would save their soul. So a lot of it has to do with compassion. But we do have a responsibility, and we have a responsibility to other churches. And there are churches that help other churches, and this church has been one throughout the years. And that's another way of sharing with the poor. When another way, and people don't even think about it, you come for a fellowship dinner and you're poor, that's another way we help the poor. Well, your church never gives anything to the poor. A lot of time people come here and eat, and that's sharing with the poor. But again, people get it in their mind, if you're not opening up a soup kitchen, then you're not doing anything. So we need to be responsible in all of this. And when we see somebody in need, we do need to pray, Lord, what would you have me to do? And that's all we ask you to do. Just ask the Lord, what would you have me to do in this situation? And the Lord will lead, the Lord will guide, and you follow the Lord's leading, and that's what a church is to do as well.